got to prove your love.
Welcome, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a bit of an open forum going on this afternoon. We're talking about all kinds of things. We're talking about the two referendums that are on today's ballot. It is a primary election, but it is absolutely not a primary when it comes to amending our Constitution. Two referendums on the ballot today. Make your plan to vote. If you don't know where or exactly what's going to be on your ballot, you can check it out at myvote.wi.gov. We're talking about all the weird things Trump's been saying these days. Over the weekend at Mar-a-Lago, 2 hours of stream of consciousness. Last night with Elon Musk, technical glitches included. Your comments and thoughts are welcome. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This hour, I'm also going to get to two op-eds published in both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times by two Republicans, conservatives, basically saying Donald Trump is off his rocker. This is really bad. And one longtime, lifelong Republican saying that he will be voting for Kamala Harris, all coming up this hour, as well as a nice closeout discussion of the Olympics. We got to end on a happy note this afternoon. There's lots of good things to talk about. The Olympics, what a game changer this particular Olympics was. The first one with fans in the seats after COVID. I was certainly excited to watch it. I hope you were too. We're going to take your calls on that and all of these topics here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You want to join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This evening, after the polls close at 8 o'clock, Civic Media's own news department, led by Terry Bell, is going to have your coverage across the network. You can listen on the Civic Media app. You can get that for free wherever you get your apps from. And you can pick your favorite Civic station. We come to you live from WAUK in beautiful downtown Waukesha. But any of our Civic Media network radio stations you can find on the app for free. It is there for your listening pleasure this evening. Wanted to share a couple of the texter comments. This one I thought particularly on point when talking about effectively the pitch that Republicans have made about why people should support these two constitutional amendments, which is, in my opinion, inaccurate, misleading, and not fair at all. They make the pitch that, oh, this is about balance of powers and checks and balances and all that nonsense. Of course, they don't think that about the federal government. That's not what Project 2025 stands for at all. It's not what a Supreme Court declaration that presidents are kings stands for at all. And yet they're unconcerned with that. We'll just worry about, you know, federal emergency dollars in the state of Wisconsin. Such an important point that Robert from McFarland, texting in from WMDX, says, hey, we're missing a piece here. We have a part-time state Senate. They don't work year-round. So what the heck is going to happen if we have all these additional layers of red tape? We've got some sort of an emergency that the governor needs to get dollars rolling into local governments. I'll also point this out. Well, hey, conservatives, what about local control? Most typically, this kind of funding, the governor is directing into local governments, their health departments, their emergency response departments, when these sorts of natural disasters, public health emergencies, or accidents happen. We've had those here in the state of Wisconsin. We've had some train derailments. We've had some significant flooding. That's what this is about. I think more red tape is bad. It has been the law of the land for decades in the state of Wisconsin. There's no need to change how this works now. We take your calls and texts at 855-75-CIVIC. Ron from Milwaukee, you're on the air. What do you have to say, Ron?
Hi. It is hard to know what Trump ever means to say. He just kind of makes it up. But this business about nuclear warming, I mean, there's one grain of truth in that comment, which is we're using nuclear fission right now, splitting the atom in our nuclear power plants to produce nuclear power. And that produces waste heat. And a long-term problem in the sense that we have to store this hot nuclear waste that may take 10,000 years to cool off. But meanwhile, we're also pouring a lot of thermal pollution into the waters and oceans. On the other hand, you're absolutely right. It's a temporary fix for our problem. It's not putting anything into the atmosphere like, you know, CO2 or methane. But I think what he meant by nuclear warming is that after some kind of nuclear weapons exchange, you know, it could be a thermonuclear war that involved the whole planet, in which case we're toast. But it could just be a war where Russia lobs a few nuclear missiles here and Israel lobs a few back. Everybody thinks that's just going to go away and be gone. But if you explode a number of these weapons at the same time, you may trigger nuclear winter, because yes. The clouds that are produced and the fallout and everything else blankets the skies. And I mean, we know that there can be natural super winters that are, you know, like a giant meteor hits the earth. So I don't know what he thinks he's saying, but it's just ridiculous. It's not. And just one other comment on the Republican legislature trying to gain more powers for itself once more. You know, it's not just that they want to have total approval over all financial deals and maybe over everything, according to that wacky GOP idea that came from the think tanks that says legislatures have supreme power in the state governments. And, you know, governors just sort of are supposed to pull the switches and everything somehow. But they also have this problem of whenever there's, for example, when the state builds up a surplus, which we have now, $3 billion surplus, which is separate from the funds that are just sitting there waiting to be used. What they want to do is sit on that until they have total control to decide how it's spent. And what they'd like to do, of course, is lower taxes on rich people and spend it on their cronies, on, you know, subsidies for businesses and so forth that like those guys and will vote for those guys. So it's just one of these. We want to be all powerful and give us this constitutional authority, and the governor will become inconsequential, except it won't work that way. They'll screw everything up. But of course, they don't mind screwing everything up.
you nailed that right on the head, Ron. Couldn't agree with you more. And of course, there's this great tension in the conservative position in state governments, as Ron pointed out. They want these omnipowerful legislatures, but when you turn to the federal government, they believe in a unitary executive. That is what Project 2025 is about. Do not let the protestation of Trump and others that, oh, Project 2025, I don't really believe in that. Yeah, he does. He's basically articulated every policy plank of Project 2025 at some point. He has articulated that, albeit nearly incoherently, as Ron pointed out. Yeah, there's two pieces when you talk about nuclear, right? That is the nuclear winter. There is widespread scientific consensus that it wouldn't take too many exchanges of those sorts of bombs to create cloud cover, debris cover that would then blank out the sun, create global famine, and devastate crops. So it's a nuclear winter. On the other hand, when we do produce power and energy through nuclear, it does produce heat waste, as Ron was explaining. Numerous data analyses have pointed out that nuclear causes far fewer deaths per unit of electricity then produced from oil, gas, or coal, in large part because of the air pollution that occurs from burning fossil fuels, which is so, so immediately harmful. Again, this is, I mean, if you read Trump, if you listen to him generously, it's basically like he muddles concepts together and doesn't have any concern over getting the details correct. This tracks with what everyone has always said about Trump, including those that worked most closely with him in the White House. They started with briefing documents, which most presidents consume voraciously. They decided, oh, well, he can't read more than a few pages. They brought those down to just a couple of pages. He didn't want that either. And eventually, folks within his orbit said, you basically have to put a pictogram that is like one or two pages at the most in front of Trump if you want him to be able to process any of this information. It's no wonder the guy can't articulate a single fact or policy platform with any degree of clarity.
Yeah, but Maggie, have you heard this?
There's nobody that understands the horror of nuclear better than me.
Right? I mean, he said it, right. And nobody understands it better than him, so we know it's true, mostly because I feel it.
Yes, if I feel it, it must be a fact. Most of us learn when we're about three that feelings aren't facts, but apparently not one of the parties these days. Let's take a listen to a couple more of these wackadoodle statements. This one, wow, this is Trump again in his interview with Elon Musk yesterday talking about Vladimir Putin.
And again, I said to Vladimir Putin, I say, don't do it. You can't do it, Vladimir. You do it, it's going to be a bad day. You cannot do it. And I told him things that what I do. And he said, no way. And I said, way.
Yeah, I'm sure it went down exactly like that. And if it did, oh my goodness, I'm sure Putin walked out and like high-fived all of his former KGB cronies. Like, we got this idiot on the line. This is great. By the way,
can you believe he wanted the translator out of there?
Yeah. Oh, that's weird. Why would he want to kick out the translator and the note taker? Weirdest thing. That conversation, that exchange between Elon Musk and Trump, he was talking about Ukraine, which begs this question. If you told Vladimir Putin not to invade Ukraine and you know that that's bad, then why, dear Donald, do you oppose funding for Ukraine? And why do all of your MAGA party wackies oppose funding for Ukraine? Makes no damn sense. We'll take your calls and thoughts when we come back. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We'll be wrapping up this conversation and moving on in short order to the Olympics. Can't wait to be talking about that with all of you out there. Keep it locked. That's Brian Kelly. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
So, do you come to Milwaukee often?
You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. On this beautiful primary Tuesday, it is voting day, folks. Get your butts to the polls. If you haven't done so already, you can check out where you need to vote at myvote.wi.gov. We've been talking about all the kind of bizarre things that Trump has been saying lately. If you want to get in your final thoughts, 855-752-4842. My favorite little tidbit from the interview last night is this last one, Brian, where I think Trump actually says something nice about Kamala Harris, I think. Let's take a listen.
And She looked very much like our great first lady, Melania. She didn't look like Camilla, that's right. But of course, she's a beautiful woman, so we'll leave it at that, right?
Her name's Kamala, not Camilla, Mr. President. He's talking about Kamala Harris is on the cover of Time magazine, basically saying she's a hot chick because that is the filter through which Donald Trump relates to women. He doesn't understand any engagement with a woman on a professional basis. And even if he understands that he has to deal with her at some level as a professional, his little walnut sized brain just still cannot place a woman outside of the frame of hot, not hot. But I guess Donald Trump thinks Kamala Harris, our vice president, is a hot chick. It sounded positive, Brian, I think, other than getting the name wrong.
I just got to say, we do a lot of, and I've heard a lot of people are saying, Trump doesn't understand a lot of things. Like, he doesn't understand how anything really works or I have yet to see anyone say anything that Trump does actually, Kamala, she's a prosecutor. She's a lawyer. So her skill is knowing the law and how to prosecute people according to the law. I don't understand what Trump's skill is. I don't know that he has succeeded at literally anything. And I've asked, and all they turn around is say, what about the other people who've never held a job? But he hasn't succeeded anything besides grifting people on merchandise that say Trump.
That's basically it. He's a master grifter, chaos agent, distraction figure. I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, at base. Karina from Milwaukee, what do you have to say this afternoon, friend?
Hello, guys. Well, about the Ukraine, at some point, he also say he doesn't care as far as he concerned. Putin can do whatever he wants to do. So a guy also cannot make his mind on anything as well. It's just so upsetting that there are so many people actually listening and following his madness. And we need to just open one all-inclusive resort, put mega Republicans in, and keep there for rehabilitation for a couple years, and then see if we can recover them back to the society.
Oh, Karina, you're making me chuckle this Tuesday afternoon. It's like a China. What do they call those? The Chinese deprogramming resorts, right? I'm sure that would go over like a lead balloon. Cam from Appleton, what do you have to say this afternoon? Thanks, Karina.
Just like those Chinese reprogramming camps, it no war in boxing, say, for any of the folks that like Avatar. I wanted to call in because the Hannibal Lecter bit.
Yes.
Brian mentioned that he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's what he hears. I also believe that he has ADHD on some level, because I as well do. And if he does this.
Oh, we lost you a little bit there, Cam. Sorry about that. Yeah, I listen, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a neuroscientist. I can't diagnose Mr. Trump. But certainly his inability to stay on one topic is a problem. It's getting talked about in conservative circles because he cannot manage the conservative message, right? He just keeps up his politics of grievance and dashes around from topic to topic. If you don't believe me, listen to the 93 minutes of hallucination and stream of consciousness garbage that was his convention acceptance speech. That's a problem when you're trying to run a campaign. And he flat out told donors, it was reported widely, I am who I am. He's not changing. This poses a really serious problem for conservatives. I want to just briefly give you a bit of what David French, a lifetime Republican, staunch conservative, pro-life Republican, had to say in the New York Times just this past Sunday. The title of his piece is "To Save Conservatism from Itself, I Am Voting for Harris." He basically says that the current MAGA party has absolutely no relationship to traditional Reagan conservatism. And they have lost all of their commitment, longstanding commitment, to the consideration of character when selecting our elected leaders. And he says this: we should take a couple of things to be entirely uncontroversial as conservatives. Here's one: lying is wrong. He goes on to say this, quote, "I am not naive. I know that politicians have had poor reputations for honesty since Athens, but I have never seen a human being lie with the intensity and sheer volume of Donald Trump. Even worse, Trump's lies are contagious and the legal results speak for themselves. He goes on to describe the cascade of lawsuits that are occurring and have resulted in hundreds of millions of dollars in damages. He says also this should also be, quote, relatively uncontroversial. Political violence and threats of violence have no place in the American democratic process. Yet threats of intimidation follow the MAGA movement like night follows day. One of the saddest stories of our time is the way in which even local elected officials and local school board members fear for their safety. I'll be curious to see how today's election goes, how election workers report, how the observers report out. I fear that election workers in our state and others have started to buy into these conspiracy theories. So is the very electoral process being co-opted by this fire hose of lies? He goes on to also say this, that cruelty used to be contemptible. And he says that cruelty is now one of Trump's most frequent tactics. And that cruelty is embedding itself, quote, within one of Trump's most loyal constituencies, conservative evangelicals. You want to check this out. That's David French in the New York Times from this weekend. We'll spend a brief minute after we come back talking about the piece in the Wall Street Journal by Jerry Baker, an extremely conservative opinion piece, opinion writer. We'll take some of his highlights. Then we'll be moving on to the Olympics. You're going to want to join us for that conversation. We come back. He's Brian Kelly. I'm Maggie Dawn. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. News and your farm update are next.
What do you have to say for yourself?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Pimps in the crib, ma. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like
yes,
it's hot.
Yes, my friends, Snoop Dogg was an absolutely critical part of NBC's Olympics coverage. I was digging it. I don't know about you. We're going to talk about the Olympics just after we put a little bit of a bookend in our conversation about what the heck is going on with Donald Trump and how freaked out are the conservatives about what's going on. I shared with you before the break a bit from a piece written by David French in the New York Times this Sunday. He is a lifelong Republican, a pro-life Republican, a Christian, and he will be voting for Kamala Harris. Go check his piece out. But I wanted to end our discussion today about this. I'll take your very last phone calls and comments, 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Wanted to share this opinion piece by Jerry Baker. Jerry Baker is a conservative amongst conservatives. He will not, I don't think, be voting for Kamala Harris. But in this opinion piece, he calls Donald Trump obtuse, lunatic, and a liar. Now, if you're a conservative out there listening, if Jerry Baker in the Wall Street Journal's opinion pages is calling your candidate obtuse, lunatic, and a liar, maybe it's time to rethink. I mean, that's just take a clear-eyed view at the facts. The title of Jerry Baker's piece, this one published yesterday, Monday, in the Wall Street Journal is Trump is looking like a loser again. About one-third of his remarks at last week's press conference, this is the one at Mar-a-Lago, were false, obtuse, or lunatic. That is the title of the piece. He begins by saying, I read the transcript and watched the Mar-a-Lago press conference, and quote, Houston, we have a problem. By my calculation, about one third of Mr. Trump's remarks fell into three categories: false, obtuse, or lunatic. I'm not talking here about the usual grotesque hyperbolic assertions or the baffling verbal manufactures, the finest of which last week was surely the description of, quote, people dying financially because they can't buy bacon, end quote. What's bothering Jerry Baker are these things. He lists them, bullet points them in his op-ed. Donald Trump's argument that he must have won Georgia in 2020 because he easily won Alabama and South Carolina, suggesting that he thinks Georgia, which has two Democratic senators and which two Democrats have carried in the last eight presidential elections, is politically indistinguishable for states that no Democratic candidate has carried since 1976. Yeah, that would be the obtuse and lunatic stuff. He also points to Donald Trump's claim that the crowd at his January 6, 2021 insurrection rally was as big as the one at Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in 1963. That's a lie, obtuse, and lunatic. It's the trifecta. And this claim by Donald Trump that everyone in America agreed that Roe v. Wade needed to be overturned. You don't get to say these things because they're stupid, is Jerry Baker's point. Remember, Jerry Baker, conservative of conservatives, on the op-ed pages of the Wall Street Journal calling Donald Trump a loser yesterday.
Just now coming across to the idea that he's a loser. Very observant.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry. You finally got here. I'll give that to you. Mr. Trump's detailed recounting, Mr. Baker writes, of an imaginary helicopter ride he took with Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco. That is false, obtuse, and lunatic, he writes. That didn't happen. Willie Brown has said that it didn't happen. What the hell is Trump talking about? This should be concerning to conservatives. If you were willing to question President Biden's lucidity, his ability to follow conversations, his cognitive salience, you need to be asking those questions about Trump as well, perhaps more acutely now that Joe Biden's not in the running anymore. He mentions Trump's wacky claim that Kamala Harris's crowds were generated by AI. It is insane what he is talking about. He points out ultimately that the problem with all of this is that this is the recipe for Donald Trump to lose. Jerry's pointing this out, Mr. Baker's pointing this out in the Wall Street Journal, to invite Mr. Trump and conservatives to change their tactics. I say, please keep doing what you're doing. It's working out perfectly. Keep saying obtuse, false, and lunatic things, former MAGA president. And it points to really, again, I think what David French was trying to say, which is simply this. If you're pro-life, that's great. And maybe in a normal election cycle, that issue alone, or whatever your particular conservative cause du jour is, could morally justify a vote for the conservative candidate. But as David French points out, that is no longer true here. If you want to be a party of morality and doing the right thing, then how the heck do you defend a guy who at his nominating convention had an OnlyFans star, a man who publicly slapped his wife, a man who pleaded no contest to an assault charge, and another man who had sex with his friend's wife while the friend watched? And that's not even dealing with Donald Trump's sexual assault conviction. This is where we are at. And David French also goes to great lengths to point out that abortion rates have increased under Donald Trump, not decreased. Abortion rates have increased under Donald Trump, meaning abortion rates were higher under the 4 years of the Trump presidency than they were under President Obama. And in addition, the best evidence available indicates that abortion rates are up since the Dobbs decision, since women were stripped of their right, constitutionally protected right to an abortion. So these arguments, if the point of being pro-life is you want to see less abortions, that's not working. Okay. Your approach to that objective isn't working. So I'll just conclude this portion of the show by saying this. David French says this: in an ordinary cycle on your one or two key conservative positions, yep, you can justify voting for the Republican candidate. You cannot morally justify that in this election. This is David French's words, not mine. The rules, the ordinary rules in an ordinary race no longer apply, and the old political categories no longer apply. The idea that the best way to confront violent Russian aggression is to vote for a Democrat is no longer disputable, he points out. To be the party of morality and family values, you need to vote for the Democrat, David French points out. And he says that you can abide, you can fulfill those more conservative values, if you view them that way, by voting in the down ballot races. But as to the presidency, David French concludes, I am a conservative, I will always be a conservative, but I cannot vote for Trump, quote, precisely because I am a conservative. I loathe sex abuse, pornography, and adultery, and Trump has brought these vices into the mainstream, and I will not and cannot vote for Donald Trump. I believe in conservatism that values integrity and demonstrates real compassion for our fellow citizens and community members, and quote, defends our foundational constitutional principles.
Where was this?
And for
in
that
16?
Reason.
Where
yeah,
was,
this
where
is
was this in 20. You know what I think is obtuse? These idiots saying this now. That's freaking obtuse. The crap that leads them to go and make excuses and pretend like everything is okay up until, oh, clearly it's obviously wrong. We've been saying it's wrong for freaking forever. And you people are just now coming around to, oh, 8 years later, I don't think this guy's really that good. Maybe I'm going to think about voting for literally anyone else. That's obtuse in the extreme. And the fact that he's sitting here going, you know what, I'm still right. Not saying I was wrong and I'm an idiot and saying the wrong thing in supporting this guy for 8 years and just now I'm realizing he's a loser. It's if you can say that you're an idiot and a loser yourself before you even begin to say this, then fine, I'll begin to believe you. But this guy is observing the most, it's just obnoxious amount of obtuseness.
And
Screw you.
I agree.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. We have frankly applauded and congratulated conservatives that have finally found their way to speak the truth.
Oh, Charlie Sykes is such a nice guy now. No, he isn't. He never was. He's a horrible person.
It should always be asked, where were you when we were pointing this out before?
Those are
the uncomfortable truths. Yes. In 2016, when it was a harder choice.
You're a moral. Yes. You talk about morality. You're a morally weak person if you came to this conclusion now.
And yet, I always want to leave the door open for people to admit that they were wrong. What Brian's pointing out, which I agree with, is that in that piece, there's no David French saying, I was wrong and I'm sorry. Those pieces where they're calling Trump out, where they're saying this cannot be squared with conservative values or principles, that this is not moral, needs to be joined with the apology. I'm sorry, I was wrong. And I helped bring us to this terrible position where we face this sort of existential threat as a country. It angers me that is not required of every single conservative who now disclaims responsibility going forward for the crisis that is represented by the MAGA movement and Donald Trump.
Well, if what you had no substance in the first place, it's really easy to pivot.
Well, there's that, too, when it's just about, you know, no government, small government, less. That becomes a little less tricky, I would agree. And with that, folks, let's talk some Olympics. How about that for a really smooth segue?
Hey, I'll put a quick transition on this.
I love it.
Despicable.
There we go.
Ah, yes. It feels so much better to move on. Folks, I knew that the Olympics were happening, but I didn't have it like scheduled to start watching this. But I completely got sucked into the Olympics this year. I thought the coverage was excellent. I loved the Snoop Dogg. There were some just incredible moments. And Brian and I want to hear from you. What were you watching the Olympics? Did you watch it on network or did you stream it on Peacock? Because apparently 22 billion people streamed at least portions of the Olympics, viewed portions of the Olympics on the app. This is probably going to change the way people watch the Olympics.
It's
forever.
Amazing. You can watch any sport at any time. Any sport at any time.
Very cool. I definitely dug it. I was did some early morning watching. I like getting up if there's something going on. A few 6 hours, 7 hours ahead of us. But we want to know what your Olympic highlights were. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. What were your Olympic highlights? How were you watching? What did you think of the opening and closing ceremonies? I had a word for them. I thought they were very French. Very French, artistic, very beautiful, incredibly well thought out. I just thought they were beautiful. What were some of the highlights for you, Brian?
Again, the French part, the fact that pretty much every single Olympian was dragged through the rain and soaked. And basically, I'm just like, that's a walking disease pit. They're going down a river that's really not that healthy to be in the first place. And they're also getting rained on. It's not going to work out very well for the athletes. And a lot of them did get sick.
Well, I mean, that's the story of Noah Lyles. I mean, I was blown away watching Lyles in the 100 meter, right? Which he won by basically a lean. That was just incredible. And Brian, that's the Snoop coming back because we got to take care of business. We'll talk more about Noah Lyles, his COVID diagnosis, and all of your favorite moments of the Olympics. Brian and I might do a little game when we come back. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin. We're doing a little light end to this Tuesday Election Day show. We're going to talk a little Olympics. What did you watch? What did you tune in to see? What did you think was your highlight moment of the Olympics? I had a bunch of them. You want to get your thoughts in? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
Here's my trivia. Do you know who this is?
I do not.
Very prominent at the Olympics. This is a piano that was just in the U.S. Embassy at Paris. This person just sat down and said, hey, can I play?
Seriously.
And this is Olympic Tide. Randomly grabbed
good.
Anyone who's completely, you would never think of.
I love that. Yeah, they're pretty good. It sounds Olympic.
The sponsor of the U.S. Women's Olympic Polo Water Polo Team, Flava Flav.
Oh my gosh, how funny! Yeah, you had Flav, you had Snoop.
Flav taught himself piano.
Apparently,
yeah.
I mean, wow.
If I told you back in 1991, yeah. If I told you back in 1991 that you know Flava Flav is going to be sponsoring the U.S. Women's Water polo team, and that Snoop Dogg is going to be everybody's best friend at the 2024 Olympics. You'd be like, Snoop Dogg, like the guy who's on a murder rap charge? Yeah, that's Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. He's bounced back.
I find it awesome. Life.
Yes, it is amazing. One of our good friends texting in, Scott from Shorewood, his favorite moment or view was the beach volleyball under the Eiffel Tower. I totally agree. I thought that was absolutely magical. So my top three, starting with the bronze medal of moments, was the win of the all-around, the team gold for women's gymnastics, and watching Simone Biles' triumphant return to gymnastics. I found that to be so inspirational. She was rock solid, really impressive games for her. Most now is the most winningest women's Olympian in gymnastics in U.S. history. She deserves all of the credit, an absolute goat in my book. That's number three. Brian, do you have a bronze medal moment?
Man, I didn't rank these. I'm just grabbing them from my face. When men's gymnastics, Paul Juda wasn't supposed to be the all-around guy. He was just the guy who was supposed to execute. Two things with that. One, they showed his parents, and Amy goes, "Oh, they look like old Polish people." And literally the second later, they're like, "His parents are Polish immigrants," which is awesome. It's awesome.
Amy, you could do commentary.
Well, Amy comes from 100% Polish family. It looks basically just like her family. It's pretty cool. But Paul Juda, when the first event in their all-around was the pommel horse. And as we know, we have Clark Kent at the end with the pommel horse. He's really good. And Paul Juda was just supposed to, you know, just do well and just don't mess it up. But he was so charged up and so excited. He executed his routine so well. At the end of it, he let out a huge, "Yeah!" And it literally just got me out of my seat. And I'm like, "Yes! We're going! We're doing it!" It was the first event. It was the first thing. And I was like, they're going to win something now. I have to now.
I love seeing the excitement of athletes. There were my number two silver medal memory from these Olympics is a collective one. And it was all of the incredible love and emotion. Like, how many marriage proposals went down at this Olympics and these great moments of both partners and parents and families, the loved ones of the athletes, showing such an outpouring of love and enthusiasm and support. The marriage proposals themselves were just incredible. I loved it. We saw all kinds of different relationships too. We saw all kinds of different family units. We saw all kinds of love. That's what it looks like, folks. That's what it feels like. And guess what? Love doesn't know any of those boundaries that certain people try to tell you it does. And that I thought was really amazing to see that on international television, on an international stage like that was really special for me. Of course, none of our regular listeners will be at all surprised to hear that my most favorite moment, my gold medal moment, was the U.S. Women's Olympic rugby team taking bronze for the first time, finally getting to the medal podium in rugby. They won that on a breakaway in the very last seconds of the game. Those of you who have heard me talk about my national championship game, we won our match in the very last seconds of that game in somewhat similar fashion. My phone was just loaded with text messages coming in. I was crying like a little kid watching that happen. I was so happy for that team. It included a University of Wisconsin-Madison rugby playing alumni. So proud of those women. So proud of U.S. rugby. Do you have a favorite couple, a silver and a gold memory or moment for you, Brian?
I like that women's soccer, they won their gold, coming back into the gold after being out for a little bit, I believe. Fun fact, Mallory Swanson, who's the wife of Cubs shortstop Dansby Swanson, scored the game-winning goal. The only goal in that game, actually.
The only one, cool. Yep.
I like the pole vaulter that had a little issue.
Yes,
was cool. But also seeing a guy who broke the world record for pole vault and seeing him miss and then watching him break the record right afterwards was amazing. Our shot put guy was amazing. There was so many really cool things at this Olympics, and I think it was done really well.
I thought it was absolutely beautiful. I loved that Paris really oriented the games around those historical landmarks. We got to talk about women's U.S. track. Absolutely amazing. I also was really impressed with both Noah Lyles and the young man from Wisconsin that took third in the 200. That was an incredible race. The man who took silver second in the 200, Noah Lyles coming in third with COVID. I mean, hey, man, that is impressive.
Asthma, COVID.
Asthma and COVID. Noah Lyles, just an incredible performance. It was gorgeous. I could have done with a little less Tom Cruise, I got to say. A little less Tom
Cruise. Can't we all?
I mean, really. He looks all puffy. I don't care that you do your own stunts. That's going to do it for Brian and I this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget, Civic Media's got your election coverage starting at 8 p.m. tonight with our very own news director, Terry Bell. You've been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. See you tomorrow, folks.